everyone. I'm chatting with Anne Bishop today. Anne is a Pilates instructor and a teacher of Pilates certification, anatomy, biomechanics, posture, both nationally and internationally. She's also the founder and creator of Body Brain Connect, and she has so much great info for us today. And so let's get started. When we learn a movement like we do in Pilates, it's a product of the connection between the mind and the body. There's a whole process that occurs to facilitate the movement and impact the quality of the movement. So with that, I thought we could start with the question of what is the body-brain connection in movement?
I think at the heart of it is the fact that we can't separate our brains from our bodies. When you think about the brain, or you study the brain, or you think about the body, or you study the body, you really can't create this dualism between the two. They are completely, part of each other. Mm-hmm. And frequently people say that you have an embodied brain. So our brain is embodied in our body. Mm-hmm. So what that means is that our body creates the context for our brain. So an example of that is, if someone is experiencing chronic pain, if your body is constantly putting out feelings of pain, you are going to have, your brain will change due to that chronic pain. And that's actually been documented in research. Now, your brain can change back, but it can change due to changes in our body. Another example is if you're an amputee and you have a phantom limb. Your brain reacts to that change in your body. And so it's just this great, to me, it's this kind of exciting connection from anything from what's your bus size to chronic pain to amputation. Mm-hmm. All of that is, going to change what's happening between, in our brains and in our bodies. And that's what makes each person physical experience so unique to that person.
So what it sounds like you're saying on a general plane is that it's kind of impossible to separate, to really separate that connection. I mean, it is the body-brain connection, and there's no way to get around it.
Yeah, or another thing that's frequently said is like, get out of your head, get into your body. Doing is you're shifting your attention. You're shifting your attention from external issues, work, kids, family, job, whatever, to internal. Mm-hmm. What's going on in my body? How am I feeling? But you're still in your head. So it's like you can't, and I feel like that's something like people will a lot of times say in a mind body class, like, oh, you're in your head, get out of your head and, focus here and on your body. But the reality is you're still in your head. You're just shifting your attention.
Right. Is there a way to define what body awareness really is?
The way scientists study body awareness is its attention. Is your attention outwardly focused, or is your attention inwardly focused? Is that when we are trying to hone and cultivate our body awareness, we're choosing to focus, to laser beam our attention into how does my knee feel when I'm doing this exercise on the reformer, or do I feel stressed out, or do I feel more relaxed? Apparently, the brain is plastic, meaning the brain changes. So if you do something that's going to ask you to increase your body awareness, there's a chance that with enough practice, you will change your brain, but in the sense of getting more body awareness. Of deciding where I want my attention. Oh, I'm going to focus my attention inward, and that takes practice. Just like meditation takes practice. Totally fascinating, because the beauty of body awareness is that it's transferable. You can take the body awareness that you gain through your Pilates session, and you can take it onto the golf course, or you can take it to the swimming pool, or you can take it to when you pick up your grandkids. The point is that when you hone body awareness in yourself or your client, you take that with you for the rest of your life.
Can we work on body awareness during any type of exercise, like jogging or cycling, or does it have to be a mind and body class, like Pilates or yoga, for example?
Do cardiovascular and be incredibly body aware.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they have to be separate. Not like a mind-body class always has to be slow. You can walking meditate. You could probably running meditate. You could cycle meditate. You know, obviously, you may not want to be doing it on the road. You know, you don't have awareness of the external world while you're internally focused. But, you know, they don't have to be separate. Well, I think that's the beautiful transferability of the mind-body modalities. Like, once you harness your body awareness, go take it running with you on the trail.
Wow, I think that this transferability of the body awareness is so key. And this brings me back to movement. And the question I have is, how do we learn movement?
You know, movement is like one of the very first things that we as humans have to do, right? You've got to learn to lift your head. You have to learn to roll over in the crib. We've got to learn to crawl. We've got to learn to walk. We've got to learn to knit. We've got to learn to drive. You know, we've got to learn Pilates. But something that we do, you know, from a very young age, our body is very in tune. Our body and our brain are in tune with how do I refine my motor skills or my movement patterns so that I can do what I need to do. Whether it's, you know, grabbing for your toy or, you know, intricately beating a string, right? It's all along the spectrum. There's a couple of different things that are happening, but the first thing you can think of, when we learn movement, we're choosing to make an action, whether that action is I'm going to slide my shoulder down before I lift my arm, or whether that action is I'm going to get up and tell this girl I want to dance with her. But what happens, you pay attention to our senses. So, you know, if we smell a fire, that's probably going to lead to the action of I need to get out of here. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if we sense, oh, that cute boy is looking at me, he wants to talk to me, I also want to talk to him, I want to get up and approach him.
Mm-hmm.
Or if the Pilates instructor just touched our shoulder blade and is like, you need to drop your shoulder, you're like, okay, I want to be a great Pilates student, so I'm going to do what my teacher says and I'm going to drop my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all of these external cues that are happening, okay? So part of what movement learning is understanding all these external cues. Then, which I think is less researched, but still I think a very important part, is the internal cues, which you could say is body awareness. The internal cues could be like, I rolled my ankle 5 days ago and it still hurts to walk. On the outside of my ankle, so I'm going to change my movement pattern and roll and walk on the inside of my ankle. Or like, wow, you know, I'm feeling really, really scared right now, so I'm going to hide underneath the covers. So what we do is we have these external cues, internal cues, and then we make decisions. And this all is happening in our brain in like very, very quick succession. And we make a decision, and then we choose to act. Once we make the decision and we choose to act, a whole other cascade of things happen, where we the motor system in our brain starts to fire, and that sends the signals down to the body, and the body moves. So I'm kind of cutting some bits out, but on a very basic level, that's pretty much. But what I think is so fascinating is what informs our decision about how we're going to move. And that's why our experience within each of our own bodies is so unique and so special, and why we have this body-mind connection. You know, you're in your own body, and you're like, well, I feel totally perfect. I feel like my shoulders are rocking. And the instructor's like, no, you know, your right shoulder is completely off.
And you and I discussed this before, but what role do emotions play when we learn movement or when we're exercising?
So your emotions are going to, you know, motivate or demotivate you to learn. Or if you're really stressed out, you're probably not going to learn as well as if when you're less stressed out, which is why you walk into a Pilates studio or a yoga studio, it usually has a sense of calm, and it makes you feel relaxed, but at the same time, you don't want a studio that's going to put you to sleep, because then you do relax, right? You're trying to find that balance.
So that's really interesting. So if you're frustrated or stressed or tired, what is it exactly that makes you less able to learn or perform?
Well, essentially, I call it the body-brain context. And it's essentially whether you're in something called a fight-or-flight mode, which is excessive stress. And the fight-or-flight mode is like a nervous system response.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And then there's something called the relaxation response, which is sort of the opposite spectrum.
Mm.
And, I cover this in my workshops, in my courses. I go over this and how you want to be within this balance when you teach.
Yeah, that's really tricky.
Yeah, especially if you're dealing with somebody's emotions and they've got, like, maybe pain or not. You really have to, and that's why I think teaching Pilates and teaching one-on-one sessions can be so exhausting, because you're not just teaching somebody how to move, you're negotiating their emotions.
How is learning movement with a teacher, like for example in a Pilates class or yoga or something like that, in a group setting or a one-on-one setting, how is that different from learning a movement on your own? And the reason why I ask specifically that is because I think it's kind of a prevalence out there do DVD, kind of workouts and like online streaming, things like that. And how does that play into it as well? So learning a movement in a classroom, learning movement by yourself, and maybe watching something on TV, learning movement that way, from an instructor on TV, how are those different?
I think the most simplest answer to how is learning movement on a television screen or a computer screen, even if it's interactive, right? Even if the teacher's working with you one-on-one versus, the in-person is, again, we're talking about emotions, and I bring it right back to emotions. A teacher is going to provide feedback for your body specifically. And even on a video, if you're doing like a Skype Pilates session, the teacher can do that. But I bet most teachers can read your emotion and the way your body is responding to the movement and the emotion it exudes better in person than not in person.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did think this was a great question, because you can be like at a on a bicycle machine at the gym, and the bicycle machine can tell you what's your heart, for your heart, what's your beat per minute, and you can be wearing a heart monitor, how hard you're, how fast is my heart pumping, and what's my BMO max, and how hard am I pushing it, and all this stuff. But, to this date, it may change. I mean, technology is moving so fast these days. But, when you're at the gym, the machine still can't tell you your knee is not in alignment on the pedal.
Right.
I noticed that you're really sort of sitting off to one side. You're super hunched over. So there's a lot of things that technology can really assist with. I think it makes one-on-one instruction better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, of course, as technology progresses, there'll always be more online options. But I think, especially the relationship of trust that within a one-on-one setting is such an important part of, working well in Pilates or yoga, kind of yoga session or part of your personal training session. You're just not going to get that from a video.
Yeah.
And another thing, this is specifically for group settings, there's been a lot of research about, to committing to exercise. And what they found is if you commit to exercise with someone else, you are so much more likely to succeed at that commitment to stay healthy. So what that means is that, you know, a one-on-one session, that means like you have a commitment because you've paid the teacher and because you have an appointment, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a commitment. But in a group situation, sometimes if you become friends with people in the class, if you go to the class with somebody, you're developing that commitment to the class, mm-hmm. right? And to the people. So in either way, whether it's with the other students or whether it's directly with your instructor, that commitment of working out with somebody else is going to most likely lead you to have a better outcome for your fitness.
When you're performing an exercise just sort of from memory and, you know how it goes and you kind of tune out, does that have an effect on the outcome of the exercise?
So essentially what's happened is you've become so good at the move, and once you've done that, essentially you've created a really strong neural pathway that you go leg circles, and your brain just knows what to do, and it's a very clear pattern of this is how I move and this is what I do. And what I think that a really nuanced student or a nuanced instructor would do at this point is say, okay, you've got these leg circles down great. So your hips are doing their thing, but what's your spine doing? What's your breath doing? What's your throat doing? What's your toe doing? So that you can work from the automatized movement and then build on that so that you're still challenging yourself. Like just shifting your awareness somewhere else during the movement. Once the movement has become automatized, you're most likely not changing your brain anymore because the brain has already been changed and is now automatizing the movement. If you want to keep automatizing the movement, you have to keep mixing things up, which can be the beauty of a lot of these mind-body modalities. Is, you know, there's umpteen variations in Pilates. You can make umpteen variations in yoga. You do keep challenging the body.
And I guess that goes even when you're, you know, practicing on your own too. I mean, there, one way, of course, is to, you know, do another type of exercise.
Or get a different CD and, like, put it in a different order, do the asana backwards, or, you know, anything to change it could be really helpful. Because at the end of the day, your brain responds when you're learning something novel, when you're learning something new. And once people frequently hear, okay, to exercise your brain, do crosswords. Well, you can do crosswords, and every crossword is new, but once you've been doing crosswords for a year, you've kind of automatized a bit how you think about that process or how you do it. So then maybe you want to play Sudoku. Or maybe you want to play chess, or maybe you want to do something that has nothing to do with your brain, and, I mean, with vocabulary and thinking about words, and maybe you want to go try exercise now.
Yeah.
You know, depending on what your goal is.
Yeah.
Whether it's just training your brain, or whether it's physical and training your brain, and that's what I really like about my body, is, like, you're training your brain, and it's physical. Like, how fun is that?
I mean, ultimately, you know, I'm sure there are a million studies that show this, how exercise could, not just because, you know, it you're getting all these physical, benefits out of it, you know, but also, like you said, you're training your brain, and you're using your brain. So it's not like when you're, you know, exercising, you completely checked out. And then when you're doing your crosswords, then you're using your brain, but it's like, exactly what you just said, you know, it's, you're doing both at the same time.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think that a good teacher or a good student, like, if you're trying to push yourself and really stay on it, like, really pay attention to what you're doing. You know, don't go on the treadmill and read a magazine. Like, you can do that, and I'm not saying, like, don't ever do that, but I'm saying, like, you're going to get more out of it if you're paying attention. Like, how's my alignment, you know? And I realize it takes years sometimes, or it takes a while to learn your alignment, you know? Can't ask somebody to do that who has the right step, right? So, you know, sometimes getting, you know, whether you you talk to your instructor after class and just say, what's a good alignment when I'm on the elliptical or something like that, to be really effective. There's still a place for just zoning out. I'm not trying to say that there isn't, but at the same time, there's an incredible place to not do that and to pay attention to your body. And there's a lot that you can learn and become more aware and keep yourself sharp.
Another question I have that I've been burning to ask, is there research about the effect of Pilates on the brain over time?
If it's new, you're changing your brain, period. If something is new to you, it's changing. So whenever you learn something new, your brain changes. Whether you're learning to juggle, play the violin, practice crosswords, but at this point, there is nothing inherently specific about Pilates. However, there is more research into yoga. And this information comes from someone else, but part of doing the asanas of yoga, that's only part. That's like there's like 8 arms to yoga, right? There's Ayurveda, there's nutrition, there's yoga, there's meditation. And practicing the asanas is only one part of yoga, right? But inherent within yoga is meditation. And meditation is absolutely been shown to change the brain. So if you are using a mind-body class and there's a meditative component about it, not only might you be changing your brain because you're learning new movements, but you're also changing your brain due to the meditation.
What does change?
So all the research that's out there has shown that you can have greater gray matter in your brain. You have gray matter changes in your brain after you meditate. So what's gray matter are the cell bodies in your brain, and they're on the cortex, which means on the absolute surface of your brain. So when you meditate, you essentially get more, I don't know if you get more, that really isn't the right word. I should say your cortex gets thicker. Now, there's nothing, because of science, you can only say so much, but that's what they found.
And what does that, do?
Well, people then report that I feel better, I feel more relaxed, I feel like I'm more centered, but there's no direct correlation to what thicker gray matter means versus exactly how you're going to feel. And if people want more studies about this, write to the NIH, write to the National Institute of Health, because so many people want to study this, but in the research world, you need a grant.
So what I thought would be really great is if you could give movement students, whether it's yoga, Pilates, or what have you, give all of us sort of tips for getting the most out of our classes or the most out of our exercises.
One of the things is, like, when you enter your class, you want to be in an alert, relaxed state. You want to try not to come in with too much stress or try not to come in too tired. So I think generally what that means is just come to class a little bit early and take a moment to, just be with yourself quietly before you start to exercise. Mm-hmm. Or even if you're running late and, like, you can't get to class early, because I know that that's hard to do for some people, just maybe within the first minutes of class, just maybe do your own thing for half a second, or just when you're really doing a warm-up, just really focus inwards and take that time to just sort of check in with yourself and just try to bring that balance of relaxation and awareness. And then the second thing that I think is really important is the way our brain understands movements is it understands it by knowing what's the goal of that movement. So anytime you're trying to learn a movement, it'd be helpful if you could be really clear about the goal. So you're like, okay, the goal of this movement is, I want to move really, really, really fast. So maybe you're on a bicycle and it's like, okay, pedal as fast as you tandem spinning class. Okay, so that's a clear goal. I'm going to do whatever I got to do to spin this you know, bicycle pedal as fast as I can. But in my body class, it's frequently like, okay, we're doing a bridge, and I want you to articulate through your spine one vertebrae at a time. So, okay, that's the goal. So focus in on that. Practice that. Work on that. Because the way our brain learns movements is generally through a goal-oriented process. You're just getting clear on the goal. And sometimes that may involve asking the teacher, oh, what's the goal of this exercise? Oh, to feel my abs? Okay, I'll work on feeling my abs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just kind of depends. But I think that number one is be in an alert, relaxed state. Number two is, do you understand the goal of the movement? And number three would be, know how you learn best. So do you learn best when you watch the instructor? Do you learn best when you hear the instructions? Do you learn best when the instructor touches you to help you understand the movement? So and that doesn't mean that you always learn best one way. You could learn best, when you watch somebody demonstrate, but for whatever reason, when you do this specific move, it's always best when you hear it or something. Or over time, that might change. But just kind of have a general idea of, well, how do I learn best? And then knowing if you're ever confused about a movement, to ask the teacher to teach in a way that you learn best. Okay, and then the fourth one, when you're a student, I think one of the best things you can do in any class is try to enhance your body awareness. And to me, there's sort of two streams of body awareness. One stream is like, do you know where your elbow is? Do you know how your knee feels? The other one is like, wow, how do my emotions feel? Do I feel scared? Do I feel happy? Do I feel stressed out? Do I feel relaxed? To me, that's kind of two types of body awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think checking in on either one of those is good.
So to learn more about Anne or take her classes, workshops, and read her wonderful blog, you can visit Body Brain Connect at bodybrainconnect.com, and you can find her blog there as well. Thanks for joining.